Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And this week we endured... maybe I'm spilling my candy in the lobby too quickly, but we listened to the band Primus. We listened to every album and EP of the band Primus. And I can't recommend you do that.
Okay, so...
We're just going to get right into it, aren't we?
Question right up front. Would you rather do Mushroomhead again or Primus again?
Oh. Wow. Talk about Sophie's choice. I think I would do Primus again. Here's the thing about Primus. Small doses of Primus, I think, are excellent. I think one album at a time of Primus is totally the way to go. But when you listen to... every album back to back, you feel like you could very easily make your, like, grow your own Primus in a lab. You just need like a bass guitar with the strings maybe a little bit loose. Mm-hmm. You need drums that play along exactly at the same pace as the bass. I don't want anybody to get the impression that I hated Primus, because I really don't. I think that they're great. I think that Les Claypool is fantastic, but I think that there are bands out there that you just can't do
large doses of.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I'm looking back at kind of other bands we've done. Frank Zappa might be mm-hmm. another one that yep. it's, you need a little bit of a break mm-hmm. between, rounds of Frank Zappa. Iron Maiden is another one, I uh-huh. think.
Yep.
Heck, I mean, you could probably, you know, argue this point for just about any of them in the list.
Yeah, I feel that way about Level 42, so.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think to some degree, everybody's got a band like that.
I probably enjoyed it more than you did, but I have to tell you that when Primus hits for me, they really mm-hmm. hit. Like, when they're good, I really like yeah. it. Yes. When they're not, it's hard because it's this avant-garde, very arrhythmic or very complicated rhythms. They know their music, and without question, yeah. they know what they're doing musically.
But, oh, without a doubt. Without
but
a doubt.
Then they've taken it and kind of turned it on its ear as kind of like a big middle finger to all the music they know.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a really good way to describe them. Very eclectic, very discordant, and to the immediate ear, possibly, you know, cacophony, right?
So that takes me to the story. Okay. I texted you this week. Yes. I was in the car with my 8-year-old and we were listening to Primus waiting to pick up my 12-year-old from school. Uh-huh. And she lets out this audible, guttural, visceral growl. And says, okay. "Dad, this music makes no sense and it's making me mad."
I love that. I love that an 8-year-old comes up with that. It's like, you know, you think that on the surface level, you think of music as, oh, this sounds good, this sounds bad. But you very rarely communicate the feelings that are associated with music, right? Yeah. Like this is making me mad. This music is just well, making me angry. And I get that. I totally get that with some of the stuff that Tristan listens to. And I'm going to use that next time we're in the car and he says, "Dad, can I plug my phone into the auxiliary port?" Like, yeah, okay. And he starts playing something. "Tristan, this music makes me mad."
This music makes me want to make you walk.
That's right. Makes me want to pull over and push you out of the car.
But she likes music. She knows her stuff. She listens to a lot of stuff. She likes some Mushroomhead. She likes some mm-hmm. stuff from Repo. Chase sure. the Morning is one of her favorite songs. Cool. She understands what she likes, and it's not just, you know, pop music and Katy Perry stuff for her. So yes. for her to react this way means she was trying to listen. She was trying to enjoy it, and it just wasn't working for her. And I think that really says something.
For sure. Yeah. I think the lyrics... You know, the fact that there's so little protruding out that you can grab a handhold on just to kind of steady yourself. It's like sliding down the side of a mountain with a lot of little bumps, and you just don't have anything you can kind of grab hold of. Lyrically, you know, like she said, the lyrics don't often make sense. When you listen to them for a while, it's like you start picking up on it. It's like, all right, this is talking about a dude. This is a dude song. A lot of their songs are about a dude, right? Like, obviously, the Jerry was a race car driver and
John was a fisherman. There's a theme there.
The fisherman and Big Brown Beaver, what's her face?
Yeah, Winona.
Yeah. So, what's that?
Tommy the Cat.
Tommy the Cat. So, I mean, their songs are very much like little mini biographies for a lot of the cases. Mm-hmm. They're little mini biographies, but not enough to where you can say, oh yeah, I really like that song about the guy who, it's funny here, cause I'm actually spill one of my playlist choices, but I really like that song about the guy who's going over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
Yeah. Well, and I think after thinking about what Audrey said, I really do think that Primus is an acquired taste. You either endure to like it, or you like it right off the bat.
Sure.
I don't think they're passing Primus fans, and I don't think there's any kind of, hey, they're okay kind of Primus fans.
I don't know. I think that might be me. I mean, I feel like, cause I've got Sailing the Seas of Cheese and I've got, Pork Soda that I picked up because I really liked a few of the songs on there and wanted to hear the rest of it. And I'll listen, you know, they're in my library under, as part of like shuffle play, like it'll pull them up from time to time, which is the perfect dose. It's like, all right, you know, you've got a Squeeze song and a Crowded House song. And then, oh, here's Tommy the Cat. And then here's, such and such, Red Hot Chili Peppers and so and so. I mean, to basically kind of put these guys in a group, I would say, you know, you've got their funk metal or thrash funk, I think they've been called.
Well, I actually came up with the description that makes them sound like there's some sort of dystopian version of bluegrass.
Oh, really? What's the description?
Like, no, a dystopian.
Oh, just dystopian version of bluegrass. I was thinking you had a little concise name that would fit on a t-shirt or something.
No, a dystopian version of bluegrass. Like, this is what the bluegrass sounds like in Mad Max world.
Wow. Okay. All right. I like that. Very good.
Max grass.
Max grass. Dystopigrass. anyway, let's get to this. Let's start going through the discography, the history of the band. Primus is an American rock band from California, formed in LA, and now they're based in San Francisco. They formed in 1984 by Les Claypool, Todd Huth, or Huth, and a Lindrum drum machine. Of course, they're known for their irreverent approach to music and style, very eclectic sound to Primus. They've been called quite possibly, quote, quite possibly the strangest top 10 band ever, and good for them. Very accurate. Their current lineup is Les Claypool. I mean, basically, Primus is Les Claypool, really. Uh-huh,
yeah. And then a couple of different guitar players. And then, as you notice, there's a running list of drummers.
Right, exactly. Like a revolving door
of
drummers. And we'll talk about that. Tim Alexander, part of the current lineup, and Larry Lalonde is a current lineup guitarist. They struggled initially to find a drummer until they found Vince Parker, who had returned from the Army. And they financed their first demo by Claypool selling his car. When they initially formed, they called themselves Primate or Primate. They changed the name to Primus after a group calling the Primates threatened legal action.
They were going to throw things at them.
Right, yeah, things. We know what they're throwing at them. And it isn't the Seas of Cheese. Before 1986, they had a series of drummers before hiring Tim Wright. They rose to fame in the local scene in 1988. Right, left, you'll see a pattern of this starting to develop. He was replaced by Jay Lane, and then they recorded another demo called Sausage, and after which, Lane left the band. Huth also left to spend time with his family, so Primus was placed on hold for a while. Les went back to his old band called Blind Illusion for a short time. While he was there, he worked with guitarist Larry Lalonde. And then coming back, Les recruited Larry Lalonde and Tim Alexander on drums. For the first album, 1989, Suck on This, or kind of an EP.
Yeah.
It was recorded with Lalonde and Alexander. It was a live recording, which was assembled from two concerts at Berkeley Square and was funded by Les Claypool's father, Mr. Claypool.
Father Claypool.
Father Claypool. Tim left the band right after that and was replaced by Brian Mantia, or Mantia. In 1990, they released the album Frizzle Fry. Two singles from that, John the Fisherman and Too Many Puppies.
Too many puppies, a big shot in the dark. Too many puppies, I'd say not too bad. The sign that must be still to the women.
Kirk Hammett of Metallica fame appeared on John the Fisherman, the song John the Fisherman.
So
they actually had quite a relationship.
They went to high school together.
They went to high school, yeah, exactly. And apparently when somebody had left, I can't remember who had left Metallica.
I think it was Cliff Burton. When Cliff Burton died, they had Claypool audition.
Right. And Claypool got in and said, "Hey, let's can we jam out on some Isley Brothers songs?" which sounds so Primus, but not so Metallica.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny. James Hetfield says it was because he was too good. He's got his own thing going on. And Claypool's like, "No, it just wouldn't have worked. That was them being nice."
Yeah, I think so. I think that I think it's a, you know, you can see it when you listen to both bands that the Les Claypool, amazing bass guitarist, one of the best, seriously, one of the best out there that I can think of. And, but his style just would not have worked with Metallica. It would have been the Metallica. I mean, it would have been the prime Metallica, basically. You wouldn't have gotten the heavy rock sound of Metallica, because I know that Les's bass would have dominated that band.
Yep. And just the way we know how Metallica felt about bass during the Injustice for All album, that wouldn't have worked because there was almost no bass on that album.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So let's see here. They went on tour with Jane's Addiction right around this time. And then they got signed to Interscope Records in 1990. Right after that, they released their album, Sailing the Seas of Cheese. This was their big major label debut. It was supported by Jerry Was a Race Car Driver and Tommy the Cat, which if you don't know it by name, that's the Say You Baby, Do You Want to Lay Down With Me song. Gonna be a lot of that this episode, I think. Hey, baby! They released a third single from that album, Those Damn Blue Collar Tweakers, but that one didn't have a video and so didn't get shown on MTV. They were a big 1990s MTV band.
Yes, they
for
were.
Sure.
Their videos are weird, yes. Groundbreaking, off-putting, a little bit. I mean, there's always that feeling they're going to do something highly and grossly inappropriate in their videos.
Right.
But they never really do. But yeah, there's always that feeling that potentially it could happen.
Right. Yeah, for sure. They also appeared on Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, the sequel to Excellent Adventure, in the segment, the Battle of the Bands segment in that film.
Yep.
They participate in the Beavis and Butthead tribute album, adding poetry and prose to that album.
I ain't one for poetry, ain't one for prose, ain't one for the scent of a springtime rose. But there is one fact that I do know. I sure get a kick out of that Beavis and Butthead show.
Sailing the Seas of Cheese went gold, and they toured with Rush, Anthrax, U2, Public Enemy, and Fishbone.
Okay, so one of those bands doesn't fit.
I'd say two of them. I'd say, I mean, U2's the obvious one, but I'd say Rush doesn't quite fit either.
Well, it's odd. When Rush was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Les Claypool covered Spirit of Radio. And
oh, really?
He does an amazing job. He's got a cellist doing the deedly 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 dee stuff.
I was just going to say, is this an attempt to get that?
He's got a cellist doing that, and it's awesome.
Wow.
And, I mean, it's a really, really good version. So after, and also Rush being as bass heavy as they are, it kind of fits.
Right.
So that one's not as much, but I don't see how U2 fits into that.
No, because 1991 would have been, let's see, right around
Zootopia,
right before Zootopia.
Yeah, yeah.
Zooropa.
Sorry, Zootopia's the movie.
You threw me off there too. Yeah, right around the whole pop experimentation thing, mm-hmm. after Rattle and Hum. Yeah, so it does seem like an odd thing, but it also seems like a. And we're going to talk about Lollapalooza later, but it does feel like kind of a Lollapalooza style lineup where it's a bunch of bands. You can kind of see how they kind of might go together in some ways, but you're getting something different every set.
Yeah.
Let's see. Their next album or their next EP was a 1992 EP called Miscellaneous Debris. Dude, this is an all cover EP, and not their only one too.
No, they've done it a couple times.
Love this. And they do a cover of Making Plans for Nigel, which is fantastic, on there, originally by XTC. It reached number 30 on Billboard's Modern Rock chart.
Now, would XTC be a band that we'd do a soundography on?
I would love to. I'd love to talk about those guys because there's so many intricacies about XTC, like Partridge's, crippling stage fright, why you don't see XTC in concert, their whole Dukes of Stratosphere 60s psychedelica period, and I think, you know, this kind of XTC 1.0 and XTC 2.0 with the album with Dear God, what is that called, Skylarking,
mm-hmm.
with the album Skylarking kind of being the first release of XTC 2.0. I feel like they were very punk before that and then kind of branched into this alt flower pop kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because obviously Primus likes them because they cover them really frequently.
They do. And they do great covers. And you know, the we'll talk about this second cover album. But they do such a great job with that earlier, like Scissorman, basically the earlier XTC stuff, because it is that it's very similar in that kind of abrupt, discordant, mm-hmm. Eclectic kind of sound.
Yeah.
And if you only know XTC from stuff like Dear God and Making Plans for Nigel and Senses Working Overtime, then do yourself a favor and listen to some early XTC and you'll be surprised at how punk they were.
Mm-hmm.
Life Begins at the Hop and Statue of Liberty and oh my god, such great songs. All right, next album was 1993's Pork Soda, debuted at number 7 on Billboard's Top 10, and compared to Sailing the Seas of Cheese, this was a way darker album for them. It dealt with suicide, murder, alienation, just had an overall darkness to it. Songs from there, though, My Name is Mud, huge hit for them. DMV and Mr. Crinkle were singles from this album.
So I found on Spotify, when I was creating the playlist, they released a Spanish version of My Name is Mud. Me llamo Mud.
Me llamo Mud. I love it.
Me llamo Mud. No lo confundes con Bilo Jaco Piro Teres. Es mi nombre y siempre lo ha sido. Porque soy el pasado más aburrido y usted ya más ha visto.
And I will put a little sample of that in there because at first I thought it was a joke, like a cover that someone had done, but no, it's them. And it takes me back because David Lee Roth actually released an all Spanish version of Eat 'em and Smile.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's really
the whole
interesting.
Album, really?
Yeah, he did the whole album. And it's really interesting to think about making those steps to be more universal, and it's how infrequently it's done.
Right. Yeah. Cause you think about, the Beatles did that with German versions of things like, She Loves You and I Want to Hold Your Hand. I remember hearing those. I played a couple, I think, or one or something on Coverville. And who is the, it was a singer, Leslie Gore, released some alternate language versions of some of her songs. And I wonder if they do that. I mean, I'm assuming they do it just to be able to release those as singles in other markets and not have to just release the English versions.
Yeah. There's a band called El Nino that did a song for the Freddy versus Jason soundtrack called How Can I Live? And I think they're originally a band from Mexico or somewhere along those lines. And so when they did the All American album, they released a Spanish version of that same single. And it's really cool how it kind of fits because of the way the lyrics work. Sometimes the messages get a little bit different, and it's kind of cool to hear if you can understand the way they make it still fit.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I'd like that. I definitely want to hear that. And I pretty much doubt that My Name is Mud in Spanish was released to capture a Spanish speaking.
No, it very much sounds, feels again, like them just having a punchline at the music industry.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Let's see. So the video for Mr. Kinkle received almost no airplay on MTV. Surprising for a band that relied so much on MTV videos for their exposure in the early 90s. They went on tour with Lollapalooza. And then during Woodstock 94.
We've talked about this. I had forgotten they were part of it. Remember how we both talked about how
we were trying to come up with who was part of it. Yeah. They actually were pelted with mud while they performed My Name is Mud in front of the crowd. And if you can remember Woodstock 94, all the videos, all the photos you saw from that were just people smothered in mud.
Yeah.
Apparently, like, I guess it had rained a lot and they hadn't thought about where they're holding this thing.
and the fact that people will throw things.
Exactly. About a minute into the song, the band stopped playing and Les Claypool said, "Well, I opened a big ass can of worms with that one, didn't I? The song is called My Name is Mud, but keep the mud to yourselves, you sons of bitches." Love it. Also in 94, Claypool, Huth, and Lane reunited to record Riddle and Abound Tonight under the name Sausage, which was named from that very early demo we mentioned earlier. It contained the song The Toys Go Winding Down, which was retitled Toys 1988. In 1995, they released the album Tales from the Punch Bowl, which contained their most successful song to date, which was nominated for a Grammy, Winona's Big Brown Beaver. They appeared on...
Says something about the bar of the Grammys, doesn't it?
It does, right. The bar is set very, very low that year. They appeared on Conan O'Brien and David Letterman. There were two other singles, but they didn't do as well. Mrs. Blaine Lean and Southbound Pachyderm.
Out of New Orleans, and he traveled with the carnival shows. Ran bump cars, sucked cheap cigars, and he candied up his nose. He got wind of the big brown beaver, so he thought he'd dig himself a peek. But the beaver was quick, and he grabbed him by the kiwis, and he ate his bone.
This one had a claymation video that was played some on MTV, which definitely feels appropriate to the band because their album covers seem like half of them were done with Play-Doh.
It looks like Aardman was also a stockholder in Primus.
Yeah, right.
Just in general.
Yeah, totally does. Totally does. And there is a consistent artist that I think does a lot of these for them.
Mm-hmm. And their cover, one of the things, I'll tip my hat, one of the covers they did, The Devil Went Down to Georgia, was a full-on claymation production, and it's awesome.
I'll have to look for that video. I love the song. I'll have to look for the video. Yeah. In 1996, Les Claypool and the Holy Mackerel presents Highball with the Devil. Much of that album was done by Claypool himself. He's released a few solo albums. However, he did work with experimental guitarist MIRV and Black Flag's Henry Rollins, the last person in the world that I'd ever want mad at me. Patrons, you'll get a little bit more for that. Alexander left the band before the album was recorded, and he was replaced by Brian Mantia.
Again.
Les said that Tim's departure was like a marriage that slowly decayed to an end, and Tim was the drummer. It was around that time also they recorded the theme for the TV show South Park. I forgot about that. Yeah. They also took part in the Chef Aid album and wrote Mephisto and Kevin. In 1997, they released the Brown album. Shake Hands with Beef, Over the Falls were singles released from this album. Basically, the way they felt talked about it, the Beatles had their white album, Metallica had their black album, so they felt like they needed their brown album.
And Weezer has every other color.
And Weezer, right. Weezer had put their foot down on every other color. Exactly. It's a time for life. In 98, we also saw them headline the Snow Cone Tour with the Aquabats.
Snow Core Tour.
Oh, Snow Core.
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted it to be the Snow Cone.
Well, that's if Panic at the Disco was doing it with Weezer, then it would be the Honda Civic Snow Cone Tour.
The Honda Civic Snow Cone Tour. Okay. The Snow Core Tour with the Aquabats, Long Beach Dub All-Stars, and Blink 182.
And there's a Utah connection with the Aquabats. They're from St. George.
Oh, really? Cool. Mm-hmm. I like them.
Then they moved to California, but yeah, there's a big Utah connection with them.
Oh, very cool. They followed that up with another EP called Rhinoplasty, yet another cover EP on this one. XTC, again, they do it. This is where you get that cover of Scissorman, which is great. They cover The Police's Behind My Camel, Peter Gabriel. It also had videos, which you would get on the Enhanced CD.
Yeah, and this is where they covered another one of my favorites. They covered The Thing That Should Not Be by Metallica.
Right. Yeah. And wasn't Metallica involved somehow in that? Like,
I'm not sure if they were that one. It was on a tribute album, later. It was
that they played together.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, Kurt Hammett was in John the Fisherman video. So.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. So cool. Let's see.
Oh, here
what
we
else?
Go.
Jerry Reed, Stanley Clark, other covers on that.
Your next line. Read that.
All right, 1999, they released the album Antipop. This album featured appearances from James Hetfield, there you go, Tom Morello, Matt Stone, Stuart Copeland, Jim Martin, and the illustrious Fred Durst. Fred Durst actually encouraged them to go back to their more aggressive sound from earlier albums. So if you like that sound, then there you go. You've got Fred Durst to thank for that. Some compared the sound of this album to nu metal, which was popular at the time.
That's a genre we need to hit. As you know, how we do genres on this.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God, is an entire genre show.
Uh huh. Yeah.
All right. 1 week. I'll give us 1 week of nu metal, and that's it. That's all I can do. The only single from this album was Lacquerhead, and it was banned from MTV because of references and depictions of drug use. In 2000, they performed a cover of NIB with Ozzy Osbourne for the Nativity in Black 2 tribute album. It was later included in the Prince of Darkness box set that Osbourne released back in 2005.
I actually have both of these Nativity in Black tributes, and I can tell you they're both really good. There's some really good things on there.
I have them too. You don't hear me often play stuff from either of them on Coverville, but I do have them. Totally dig it. Let's see here. In 2000, they performed that. I did that. In 2000, they declared a hiatus, which lasted until 2003. During that hiatus, Tim Alexander released two albums with the band Laundry.
And I own both of those, and they're awesome.
He also performed with the Blue Man Group, A Perfect Circle, and many others. Claypool played with Oysterhead with Trey Anastasio and Stuart Copeland. And then he did his own project, the Fearless Flying Frog Brigade. Can't say, I looked at that ahead. I said, I bet I can say that in one shot. The Fearless Flying Frog Brigade. The Fearless Flying Frog Brigade. Dang it.
Yeah, I didn't fearless... put
the... I'm surprised I haven't said Flying Frog Brigade at any point. The Fearless Flying Frog Brigade. It's the word brigade. I could get through the Fearless Flying Frog.
Yeah.
But brigade, it just... It's the thud that I land with on those.
Yep.
He also played with Buckethead and Bernie Worrell.
And I've seen some of the videos on YouTube of him performing with Buckethead. And Buckethead's an odd guy, too. It's like a marriage made in odd musical heaven.
Sure.
With Claypool thumping around on his bass next to a man wearing a white mask and a KFC helmet.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Oh, yeah. Of course, Buckethead. Yes.
Yeah.
I've seen photos of Buckethead playing. That's cool. In 2003, they released the Animals Should Not Try to Act Like People EP with an accompanying DVD. They reunited with Lalonde and Alexander for this one. And they went on a 2-month tour promoting two sets. And the second, they performed Sailing in its entirety, Sailing Seas of Cheese in its entirety. In 2004, they used the same format, but instead of Sailing the Seas of Cheese, they did Frizzle Fry in its entirety. And for both of these tours, they sold recordings directly recorded from the soundboard online. I love that. And I love that that's becoming a new popular thing where as you're leaving the concert, you can go to the merch table and say, I'd like the album of this concert and buy it right then and there.
Did they? So Pearl Jam kind of revolutionized this. I know Dave Matthews has done similar things. Metallica now has this huge online store where you can go and download some lesser shows where just regular for shows for free if you're a member of the fan club. But then they have like entire box sets and crazy collections of things that you can get from their store for kind of minimal prices. Wow.
That's cool. And I mean, would we have any of this without the Grateful Dead?
True. Yeah. True. Yeah.
With people. I mean, those are more bootlegs and
tape trading circles,
tape trading online and stuff like that. Yeah. Before online. What am I talking online? I'm
those doing zines. This.
Right. Yes, exactly. Holy cow. Let's see. In 2004, we saw the release of Hallucinogenetic Live. At Bannaroo that year, they covered Rush's YYZ with an appearance by Adrian Belew of King Crimson fame on Thela Hun Jinjit, which is a cover of a King Crimson song.
Which totally makes sense because of all the... I mean, Tony Levin is a legendary bass guitar player. And I think that... I mean, him... Les Claypool being a Crimson fan is not a stretch. Yeah.
No, not at all. Yeah, no kidding. You look at stuff like... Elephant Talk,
which is actually a Chapman Stick, but whatever.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fine. I guess we need to do a King Crimson soundography at some point too.
It's a detuned Chapman Stick. It's really cool.
Wow. Okay. In 2006, John the Fisherman appeared in the video game Guitar Hero 2. They also released a Greatest Hits album and DVD in 2006. The DVD contained live footage from the band's 2003 Tour de Fromage, you know, Sailing Seas of Cheese, interview segments, behind-the-scenes footage, and also includes a 70-minute feature film and 90 minutes of bonus material, including a 30-minute mockumentary about the band in the year 2065. Blame It on the Fish was directed by Matthew J. Powers, and then They Can All Be Zingers, The Best of Primus, includes 16 digitally remastered songs that span the band's career.
And that collection of songs is really worth getting. But then you put it on shuffle.
Right.
With the rest of your collection.
That is the one we're going to be linking to for sure for the show notes of this one. Because it's a great collection.
Yeah.
It really is. It was revealed in 2011 that Tim Alexander lacked interest in continuing Primus, shocker, despite enthusiasm from Lalonde and Claypool. Claypool hinted that the band could have recorded with Alexander, but that when we did readdress Primus in 2003 and 2006, it was more of a nostalgic thing. It was great at the time, but it just didn't have that creative spark as far as moving forward, and thus the reformation instead focused on touring. Phil Lesh announced in 2010 that he was leaving his current band to rejoin Primus and be their drummer. Primus announced a tour with Gogol Bordello, Wolf Mother, and the Dead Kenny G's. I love that band name. I've never heard that before.
Neither have I. I'm going to be doing some looking at the Dead Kenny G's when we are done.
Right. Oh, it's so good. In 2010, Primus released their June 2010 rehearsal. It was a free four-track EP that was available to download from their website. It had four songs that had been previously recorded with Lane on drums. Jerry the Race Car Driver, speaking of back to video games, was included on Rock Band 3. Anyway, had to get that one in there. In 2011, they released Green Naugahyde. The first single from that, Tragedy Is A-Comin', was released in August of that year for streaming on the Spin magazine site. And Hoenn Foda Man was then released on Rolling Stone's site. Then TV show South Park made the entire album available for streaming if you like their Facebook page. That included Those Damn Blue Collar Tweakers as a bonus track. In the fall of 2012, the band went on tour with the first ever 3D enhanced live musical performance. Each show featured quad surround sound and 3D visuals. Okay. Do you know anything more about this?
How they did this? Here's the thing that's interesting when you think about it.
Yeah.
And maybe this was the joke, knowing them. Right. If you're standing next to them, watching them perform, they're in 3D.
Right. Every concert is a 3D experience compared to seeing them on video.
And then based on where the speakers are, it's going to be quad surround sound. So I'm not sure if this is them with tongue firmly planted in cheek or if they actually did something different technically.
Right. The fact that it's this 3D enhanced, I don't know. I'd be really curious to see if there was actually a...
With 3D enhanced just means they got a fire hose and shot the crowd. I mean, I'm not sure if, like I said, I am so unsure if this is a joke or if they really did something different.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to look that up. In September of 2013, Lane left the band and Tim Alexander rejoined the band as like the revolving door of drummers that we mentioned. On September 16th, 2014, a biography of the band was released via Akashic Books titled Primus Over the Electric Grapevine, Insight into Primus and the World of Les Claypool.
I'm definitely going to buy this book.
That feels like that title is the first chapter. yeah, you should. Let me know how it is.
maybe he reads it on Audible.
Maybe. I think they lost two drummers in the time it took me to read that title. The book was written by music journalist and author Greg Prado in affiliation with Primus. The book chronicles the band's career alongside Claypool's other projects and features interviews with band members past and present and past and returning and past and drummers, as well as folks like Geddy Lee, Tom Waits, Tom Morello, Kirk Hammett, Stuart Copeland, Trey Anastasio, and Matt Stone from South Park, among others. I forgot about that Tom Waits connection. They did a song with him. Was it on Green Naugahyde? Can't remember, but there's a song. It's the one with the one that's got Fred Durst on it as well.
Lacquer,
right. Yes, has got that Tom Waits tune on there. In 2014, Primus and the Chocolate Factory was released with the Fungi and Ensemble. While performing live in 2014, Primus were joined by the Frog Brigade Ensemble, consisting of saxophonist Sherrick and percussionist Mike Dillon, as they performed the entire soundtrack from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory in its entirety. This is the 1971 one, not the Danny Elfman thing. The band later announced that a studio recording of the soundtrack titled Primus and the Chocolate Factory with the Fungi Ensemble would be released, and it was on October 21st, 2014. I love this album. It's kind of surprising, too, that that I didn't put anything from this on my playlist, but I think the album is just one to pick up as a whole, as a full thing, because it's so it wavers so much between tracks. Like, you get one track that is full on, all right, this is World of pure imagination sounds somewhat close. It sounds like Primus doing that, but then you get to sing these other songs and it's like, holy cow, this is, I want it now. This is, it's so far out.
Well, totally far out. They what I think they do is, if you watch the movie and listen to the music, there's a little bit of discordant, kind of off-putting feelings in the film.
There is, yeah.
Having Primus do it puts a magnifying glass on those.
It totally does. Like that, yeah, I mean, there's such, you don't get this again as much in the remake, the Tim Burton remake. But yeah, that old movie, there's all that great nostalgia for it. And there is a very,
sinister underlying.
Sinister dark side to it, for sure. The tunnel, you know, with the chicken getting its head cut off visually in the tunnel.
Yeah. And just that scene where he's chanting and it's going faster and it's a little bit scary. And
right.
I mean, he could either give them candy or murder them at that point.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you see the kids at the end of the movie in the Tim Burton remake. You never see the other kids at the end of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
They've been ground up and put into candy.
That's right. You're eating some Augustus Gloop in that chocolate bar right there.
I do want to throw in that Les Claypool does the voice of a murderous ventriloquist doll. Named Moxie in this kind of moderate, low-budget film, independent film called Murders of the Brandywine Theater. And his voice is perfect for a murderous doll.
Totally. My name is Moxie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does he do in that very nasal?
No, it's very much Les Claypool's voice. But it stars Dian Bacar, who was in, who worked with Matt and Trey from South Park.
Oh, really? Yeah. South Park. Okay.
Yeah. He's one of the, if you've seen Cannibal, the musical, he's the little guy.
Oh, gotcha. Is this kind of a little more, like Team America then? And kind
no,
of
this is really scary. I mean, it's
really, okay.
It's got a sinister side to it. It's got some funny things to it, and it stars like two wrestlers and it's got, you know, a kind of a cheeky side to it, but it's got a sinister side to it. It's good though.
Yeah. Not available to stream anywhere, but you can buy it on iTunes or rent it on iTunes and Amazon and Google Play, of course. Cool. I'll have to check that out. Sounds awesome. And now currently on July 31st of this year, Primus announced that their ninth studio album, The Desaturating Seven, would be coming out as well as a US tour. They released the first single, The Seven, on the same day. The album is inspired by the children's book The Rainbow Goblins, written by Italian author Ulderico, which Claypool used to read to his children when they were kids. And this album is going to be released at the end of this month in about 3 weeks from today, or from when we record this. So
yeah.
There's the sausage being made. You guys get to know how early we record these things before we release
Oddly
them.
Enough... It's weird. I mean, The Seven is actually a really pretty good song, but when I heard that he used to read these books to his kids, it made me realize that when my kids were younger, I used to sing them Nothing's Gonna Harm Me from Sweeney Todd. So
then we all have a little bit of darkness. Yeah. We used to sing Tristan Bjork's Venus is a Boy. And
did you wear a dead swan around your neck when you did it? Is that
we
why
did? Yeah. Isn't that normal? Isn't that what normal people would do? All right, so that brings us up to the current day. Hammond, tell me some statistics and general notes about these guys.
Okay, so they won, so Frizzle Fry won a 1990 BAMMY Award. I'm not sure who the BAMMYs are, but it sounds like something Primus would win.
Yeah, the BAMMYs. I'll look that up while you're...
Then Sailing the Seas of Cheese Pork Soda both went platinum. Tales from the Punch Bowl went gold. And Winona and her Brown Beaver got a Grammy nomination. And then 2013, the Sailing the Seas of Cheese Deluxe Edition got nominated for Best Surround Sound Album. Mm. And I think that, you know, like, I enjoy those 5.1 mixes, the DVD audios,
yeah,
and the Blu-ray audios. And I think that's one I might want to look for and pick up, because I think that with the ambient noises that they tend to use and kind of some of the atmospherics, there could be some really cool things that happen with that one.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
So what's a BAMMY?
BAMMYs are the Bay Area Music Awards.
Okay.
However, in 1998, they changed the name of the Bammies to the San Francisco. Where is it right here? The California Music Awards.
Oh, wow. They became more encompassing.
They did, right, including going outside of the Bay Area.
Interesting.
Yes. All right. So you're going to go see Primus in concert, and you're going to pick up some mud and huck it on stage and really tick off Les Claypool. Good job. Well done. Why'd you do that? But before they leave the stage in a huff, what song are you guaranteed to hear from Primus? I feel like this is an easy one.
So the list I came up with: Jerry Was a Race Car Driver, My Name is Mud, Tommy the Cat, Big Brown Beaver, and John the Fisherman.
I think that if they're doing a full-on show, I mean, I think even if they're opening for somebody, you're going to hear all those. Yes. I would be surprised if you don't.
So my guesses are My Name is Mud or Jerry Was a Race Car Driver.
Yeah, and I would go along with those. I'd probably flip-flop the order. I'd put Jerry in front, only because of it coming out one album earlier.
Yeah.
Then My Name is Mud. You would be exactly correct. Jerry Was a Race Car Driver is their most performed song in the concert. Never did win no checkered flags, but it never did come in last. Jerry was a race car driver, he'd say hell's off number one. With a Bo Seaman sticker on his 442, he'd light him up just for fun. Followed by one we didn't have on our list, but one we talked about quite a bit up above, which is Those Damn Blue Collar Tweakers.
Oh, and really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now that I say that, that is, you know, that does kind of make sense as much as we talked about. They released that on bonus tracks, live versions, as extra tracks on some of the CDs. So that totally makes sense. My Name is Mud is the very next one, followed by Groundhog's Day, Here Come the Bastards, Too Many Puppies, Too Many Poppies.
I was afraid to listen to Groundhog Day because it might just get stuck.
I've just put that on repeat. Tommy the Cat, Herald of the Rocks, American Life, and Southbound Pachyderm rounding out the top 10. Yeah, Big Brown Beaver and John the Fisherman don't appear until later on the list, 14 and 17, respectively. So there you go. I wonder what a Primus concert would be like. Could I handle, if I can't handle more than an album at a time of Primus, would I be able to handle a Primus concert?
I think it depends on where for me.
Yeah.
And it depends on who else played with them.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Sure. All right, now is the time. Now is the time on Sprockets Soundography when we give our playlists, yeah? And as always, I'll go first. Here are five songs that I feel need to be added to your Primus playlist. This one's a bonus track that they've released on the Frizzle Fry compilation. It's also available on a Residents tribute. I think it's called We're a Happy Family, tribute to the Residents. Skinny never knew any question. Skinny never looked at lights. Skinny sold something. It's a cover of Hello Skinny Constantinople, and Residents have to be an influence on Primus. There's no question to me that the two of them travel in the same circles. And being the fact that we've never actually seen the faces of the Residents, it wouldn't surprise me if one of them was Les Claypool, now that I think about it. It's so cool. And of all the covers that they do, that one just feels like such a natural choice. The next one comes from Pork Soto. It's called The Air Is Getting Slippery. Surprise, my heart is beating, ringing the beat, the sweat, it fills my eyes. I do not mind what I extract, because I'm here to make a buck. And those that cannot take the heat can take a flank. Forgive me if I hesitate. It feels like they started out doing the Teddy Bear's Picnic, and then they just like changed the words and the style of the song. But it's "We're Gonna Have a World Today," which I really like. Dion's a Jig from Tales from the Punch Bowl is my next choice. It's a super refreshing change from the rest of their music. When I got to this one, it's like, oh, this is nice. This is like a different sleeping bag I can stretch out in. And it's such a cool change. They've got a banjo in there. He plays the bass guitar, but makes it sound like an Oompa Oompa tuba. So cool. Really, really like that. Fisticuffs from the Brown album is my next choice. Speaking of Residents covers, this one is not a Residents cover, but it feels like it should be. Like, this feels so Residents it hurts.
Yeah.
And then last one, I guess, is maybe it was released as a single, but whatever. I'm including it. It's called Over the Falls. And it's about a guy who's going over a waterfall. And I'm guessing my initial thought was it was a guy going over Niagara Falls. But as I was looking at the lyrics, the fact that he's going over it again, I don't know. It seems like
maybe it's a metaphor.
Maybe it's not Niagara Falls. But it's funny. It's like... the fact that he's admiring his vessel for its symmetry. It's their way of saying it's a barrel without it being a barrel.
And I could be just reading into things because of where I am in life, but
sure.
it could be a metaphor for drug abuse.
They could all be. This whole thing could be a metaphor for drug abuse. Yeah. Right. Talk was strapped him in, his lip beaded with sweat. Oh, you totally could be right. Like,
don't sound so surprised, Brian.
I'm surprised by my not picking up on
it.
It could be a drug reference more than the fact that you're right. Although, now that you bring it up, I'm surprised by that too.
You've been talking to my wife.
That's right. All right, get to your playlist, sir.
Okay, I had to do it. I went with a double went down to Georgia as my number one. Check out the video. It's very Primus, but it also retains all of that Charlie Daniels magic. So it's definitely worth a listen, and it's definitely worth finding. So find it.
Does he play the fiddle or does he play the bass?
Johnny, he plays the fiddle still. They keep the words the same. They don't change it up like Blues Traveler did.
Cool. Right. Oh yeah, right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Then Mr. Know-It-All from Frizzle Fry.
They call me Mr. Know-It-All. I will not compromise. I will not be told what to do. I shall not step aside.
And I actually wasn't going to put this on the list until I heard the last few lines where he talked about how eloquent he is, and then ends it with, or whatever rhymes with eloquent.
It's the greatest couplet ever. It really is so cool. I've, as soon as I heard that, I jumped into our document and was about to put it in my list, and I saw that you already did. So all I just did is put right next to it. Damn it!
Then I picked John Was a Fisherman. This is from Suck on This.
Yeah.
but I don't care. And it's all kind of about following your own path, which is what Primus does.
Totally.
And it's not a bad message to have if you can get through the Primusness of it.
True. Yeah. Totally. Totally true.
And you picked one that sounds a little different. I picked one with a different subject matter. I picked Bob from Pork Soda, and this is about a friend of his that committed suicide. I guess it's about a friend of his, but it's about suicide. And
oh, wow.
It feels different. It's far more serious. It's far more somber in its tone. And it was something different sonically. And subject matter wasn't quite as goofy and silly. So I felt like it needed to be called out. And it's a good song.
Cool.
Then I added Is It Luck from Sailing the Seas of Cheese. And this is a really cynical song about fate, luck, and destiny.
Yeah, I like this one too. This was almost one on mine as well.
And I think if we weren't going to link to a greatest hits, I think C's might be the one we would link to.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess that a majority of the songs on that that greatest hits, that remastered greatest hits album, is going to be from Sailing the Seas of Cheese, just because that does, it feels like such a great breakthrough, coherent snapshot in time and of the early 90s. So,
and I think it is again another example of what a band with talent can do when they're given a producer who understands them.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And then I had a bonus track because it had to be brought up, and it's the thing that should not be, and it's off Rhinoplasty. Their cover of the Metallica song from Master of Puppets, and Claypool does a great job, and it's such a bassy song to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So having someone who's very bass centric do it totally works, and it lets the guitar player actually do stuff other than kind of squealy notes and chords that they are kind of relegated to in Primus. It lets them actually be like chuggy metal guitar players.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like it's a change.
Yeah.
For sure to hear him doing that. Yeah. I feel like Rhinoplasty and Miscellaneous Debris, they should just combine those on one big great cover CD. I guess then you'd get a couple XTC covers.
They could call it Snot, because then it would be Nose Junk. Nose Debris.
Nose Debris. Sure.
So just call it Snot.
Snot. Great. Did you pick up the new Snot from Primus?
Is that Metallica? No, it's Snot.
No, it's not. Hey, is that the second XTC cover on here? No, it's not. All right. Anyway, there you go. There's your Primus. And I think the thing to come out of this knowing is that we both like Primus. We like Primus better in small doses.
Yes. Primus is not it's a snack. It's not a meal.
Right. Yes. I like that. Perfect. All right. Well, let's tell you about next week's episode of Soundography. We're going to be covering the band Drive-By Truckers. I'm excited for this because I know very little about this band.
I know about them through my brother-in-law, and he's a huge fan of these guys.
So is he the impetus for this one?
Kind of. What it is, he's talked about them enough that they got on my radar, and this show created the excuse for me to bring them up, and we both will be kind of experiencing it for the first time.
Cool. Love it. I'm looking forward to this because Southern alternative, Southern rock, country, influences. oh, they're from the Shoals of Northern Alabama. So cool. Oh, this is going to be good. I'm looking forward to this. 11 studio albums for me to get through. I can do that. I can do that in my sleep.
Yep. Now. My brother-in-law says that they have the greatest opening lines in music history.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Oh, then I'm really excited about this. So there you go. Drive-by truckers on the very next episode of Soundography. Between now and then, get a hold of us. Email us. Soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address to use. Follow us on Twitter @TheSoundography. Of course, everything else you want to know, soundography.com. That's where you're going to go. And I didn't mean to end that, but it came out beautifully. That's going to have your archive of previous episodes. You're going to find show notes for each of our episodes where you can actually leave your comments. You can check out the playlist, the Spotify playlist for each of these bands, including the one we just did for Primus. You can find a link to where you can buy usually the greatest hits album or an album that we recommend from the artist. And of course, you can find a link to support us on Patreon. We love that you're a supporter if you're already a supporter. And if you're not, hey, throw us a buck or two every month. We'd really, really appreciate it. Helps keep the lights on in the Soundography studios, which stretch all the way from Colorado to Utah. It's expensive keeping the lights on all the way through that tunnel.
It's one strand of LEDs.
It is buried underground. I tug on it and it pulls a glass off of Hammond's desk every single time. Leave your reviews everywhere or anywhere, wherever it's convenient. Let us know what you think on Twitter or post your reviews on iTunes or Stitcher or Spreaker or wherever you want to post them. Like I said, next week is the Drive-By Truckers. Be here for that, won't you? On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott thanking you for listening to Soundography. We're going to see you right here next time on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.